today is April 10th. Hi, my name's Daniel Gunther. I'm an audio engineer at Jack Straw, and I've had the pleasure of working with Josephine in the studio recording some of these oral histories. So, Josephine, can you share how the Skid Road Oral History Project began?
Thanks, Daniel, and thanks for all of your help over the years with this project. So I recently pulled out a lot of my notebooks that I've kept over the years, various kind of writing-related projects, and looking at the one specifically that has become the Skid Road Oral History Project. It began in the fall of 2013. And originally, I was calling it Listening to Skid Road. And at the time, I was thinking about the origins of Harborview Medical Center. I was doing a project down there and teaching nurses, health humanities course, like kind of about art and writing and reflecting on health and healthcare, and was riding the shuttle bus between the UW Medical Center, where I work, and Harborview Medical Center, and have always been impressed with the mission and the work of Harborview Medical Center and wondering how it came about. I had just begun kind of historical research, reading, you know, for instance, Murray Morgan's book, Skid Road, An Informal Portrait of Seattle, and the shuttle bus was part of it. Would go at the end, would go up Yesler Way to Harborview Medical Center, and through what then was you know the housing project Yesler Terrace that now has been torn down and made into kind of mixed income housing, and I knew from reading books, et cetera, that Yesler Way, for instance, was the original Skid Road in Seattle. Skid roads being early kind of forestry timber term for logs that were laid down horizontally. They were greased with fish oil, so they really stank. but it made it so it was super slick, and the people logging, you know, these huge fir trees, et cetera, in the Seattle area would then roll the big logs down the hill, down Yesler Way, down Skid Road, to Puget Sound, where Yesler Sawmill was located. I was fascinated with the term Skid Road, and was beginning to do kind of archive research on where that term came from, like how it evolved from being this very specific logging term. And, you know, they called the men in many of the newspaper articles from that time Skid Road men, but they were the loggers. And then how, you know, asking myself, how did that turn into people rolling down into poverty and homelessness? And so that's really where it started. I was literally listening to conversations in and around the hospital, in and around Yesler Terrace. I was also simultaneously working at a clinic in the Downtown Emergency Services Center in the Morrison Hotel when they still had their large shelter, working with groups of our medical and nursing students providing kind of basic health care, and I was also doing that in the Chief Seattle Club, which again is in the Pioneer Square area of Seattle and provides amazing services to indigenous people experiencing homelessness. So all of those, of thinking of conversations, obviously protecting patients and people's identities, and wondering to myself how I could incorporate people's stories of their experiences into what was developing as the Skid Road history project that became a book and some videos and the oral history project.
Were you familiar at all with the history of homelessness in Seattle before, you know, 2013 or so when you started this, or have you kind of been uncovering that history as you've been going?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. I first moved to Seattle to work, and to work specifically providing health care to people experiencing homelessness, teens, young adults, and then all ages, and also teach at the University of Washington. And that was in December of 1994. So I had been doing the work with various agencies, you know, interfacing with Seattle King County Health Department, which is an amazing health department, and their health care for the homeless program. So I knew a lot about homelessness in general. I'd worked specifically on homelessness, healthcare provision, as well as research on the East Coast in Virginia and then in Baltimore before I moved to Seattle. So I knew the contemporary landscape of homelessness sorts of things. I'd started working in homelessness in my then hometown of Richmond, Virginia, in the early 80s, and that was during our country's, you know, what now has been called the rise of new homelessness. And so I knew about that. I did not know the history, specifically about the history of homelessness in Seattle. I was attracted to move to Seattle because of its progressive politics. And also because at the time I was a single mother, and I felt it was a better place to raise my son as a then single mother, and then as a lot of people are, if they come to Seattle for the first time, I was amazed at the sheer number of people experiencing homelessness in Seattle, and that it was not getting better. It was actually growing. So that kind of dichotomy of here we are progressive, you know, for the most part a very caring community, and yet we have this abject poverty and suffering and homelessness in our midst. So that's when I started, you know, reading books on more of the history of my, you know, now adopted hometown of Seattle. And again, you know, with like Murray Morgan's more informal history, and then getting into more of the formal histories of Seattle to try and start parsing out what was really up with this phenomenon in Seattle.
Yeah, gotcha. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but would you say your own personal lived experience has kind of influenced or driven this whole project of wanting to talk with folks and uncover some of this history?
Yes, definitely it has. I'm totally comfortable answering that question. I've written a book about it, you know, Catching Homelessness, about, you know, my own history with homelessness as a young adult. And I, before I became homeless myself in my kind of mid-20s, I had already been working exclusively with people experiencing homelessness. So I already had that interest. I think in retrospect, you know, if you'd asked me when I was in my early 20s about this, I would not have had the self-insight that a long kind of hindsight and reflection has given me. But I grew up in a lot of privileges, middle-class family, you know, focusing on education, et cetera, and, you know, in a white family in the South. But I also had really significant childhood traumas that had not been addressed. So I think, again, in retrospect, that is what drew me to working with people, and especially teens and young adults who are closer to my age then, who were having struggles with all sorts of different traumas and homelessness. So then the experience of homelessness, which for me, it was, you know, it was discrete, it was short term, it was about 6 months. Lived in my car, lived in my like a storage shed 6 months, and also couch surfing, et cetera. Very, very common couch surfing for teens and young adults. And before I got myself out of Richmond, Virginia, which was not a good environment for me, and moved to Baltimore and got therapy. I had part of my depression, too, was not just PTSD, but really, really severe depression.
So you're probably coming up on like 10 years of doing oral histories for the project. Is that right?
Yes. And even longer if, you know, again, I kind of start with 2013, first getting into this. I mean, I've always loved people's stories, right? I mean, that's one of the things that I love about being a nurse and nurse practitioner is getting to know people, you know, as much as they're comfortable sharing, getting to know them over time, if that's possible, building rapport, and wanting to know also, I mean, it's, I think, human nature of wanting to know what happens to them in the future, especially the teens and young adults that I was working with. So that led me to the Oral History Project. I obviously had heard of oral histories. I mean, you know, was it Studs Terkel and all of his work? But I'd never done oral history interviews. I'd done a lot of qualitative research, so in-depth interviews, which are similar, but, you know, those were very focused on kind of health issues or healthcare access issues. So I got help from the archivists at University of Washington Special Collections. They have a consent form that they recommend using, which I've used for doing the oral history interviews. They'll all be archived. When I'm finished with them all, they'll all be archived at UW Special Collections. And I also have had the privilege of working with a public historian locally, Lorraine McConaughey, who her expertise is on oral histories. And so I got her help to come up with, you know, just kind of initial open-ended questions and started doing these in June of 2015. And started off first with people who I knew, who I was already working with. The very first interview was with Nancy Amade, who is an amazing social worker, you know, civic engagement person, who I met even before I moved to Seattle. Really admire her work. And then just kind of doing snowball sampling after that of interviewing people, asking them who they thought, you know, who they recommended that I interview, and wanting to make it as diverse as possible, you know, not just the kind of usual suspects of politicians, you know, or people that are working on various renditions of kind of our endless 10-year plans to end homelessness in the area, but also people just like working direct service, you know, frontline workers. And then also, and again, this probably is, like you asked about how my experience of homelessness informed what I do, what I write in this oral history project, is recognizing that there are really, really amazing people who have the lived experience of homelessness. They may or may not be, like I call it, out about that, because it is still, you know, unfortunately, very stigmatizing. You know, people always want to kind of individualize it, like, what was wrong with you? What did you do to become homeless? But realizing a lot of people I was working with did have the experience of homelessness and were doing amazing work. You know, now, again, we're housed and we're giving back to the community. So that became a lot of my focus of seeing if I could include people with that. I've had people ask me and are kind of surprised that I have not included interviews, oral history interviews with people who are currently experiencing homelessness. I do that's my own ethical decision making. I personally feel that that is that that's not fair to the person experiencing homelessness, because that, you know, homelessness itself is traumatizing, and that, and people are in a vulnerable position, and I don't want to have them. It just doesn't feel right to me. So I have avoided doing oral history interviews with people currently experiencing homelessness, and I stand by that decision.
So you've conducted over 50 interviews specifically for this project at this point.
Yes, and again, over, you know, almost 10 years. Some of it I paid for myself, you know, both the sound recording and engineer time. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Jack Straw. But also have paid a really excellent professional transcriptionist to do, you know, the transcribe the interviews. That's Penny Miller, a local transcriptionist. And so, and getting, you know, various, cobbling together various grants, Humanities Washington, For Culture, Jack Straw, places like that. Thank you very much for that support. And as of, I have three more oral history interviews already scheduled for this month into next month, into May, and I will have completed 60 oral history interviews.
That's amazing.
I've asked myself, do I keep going? I mean, they're actually a lot of fun, but I think I'll pause them for now.
Yeah, that's incredible. Is there a common thread between all these conversations that you've kind of gleaned from talking with folks?
Yes, I think, you know, across all of them, you know, it can, you know, include like former mayors of Seattle, and again, people, social workers and case managers and nurses and physicians and outreach workers, that kind of, that common compassion, you know, no matter where they're working and how they interface with homelessness, and whether or not they have a personal experience with homelessness themselves or with somebody who they got to know. Like the three-term former mayor of Seattle, Charlie Royer, talked about a man experiencing homelessness and alcoholism on the streets of Portland, Oregon, when he was working in radio, and how that person, the relationship he built with that person, has really affected him and his work on homelessness issues and healthcare during his time as mayor. So really a commonality of compassion combined with, I would say, and again, this is over 10 years, so a lot has happened, pandemics and, you know, Obamacare, ACA, and all sorts of other things, but of, I think, continued frustration with things not moving forward, with it actually getting worse, despite concerted efforts by, you know, many, many well-meaning people, again, at all levels, and the fact that we know what actually works to prevent and to, you know, to make homelessness very short-term. But we don't seem to be able to have all of the different systems necessary for that to work together to really make a dent in, a meaningful dent in homelessness.
Well, I commend you for doing the work, even if it's just, you know, making space for these conversations.
Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your words with me.
All right.